Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
As you all know, thousands of people have joined protests and demonstrations around the United States and around the world in response to the persistent and systemic racism that has permeated American culture from the inside out. The murders of Black men and women like George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and David McAtee have been reported, shared, retweeted, broadcast, and televised in recent weeks, and they come as just the latest in a too long list. We have seen this outcry before, but compounded with the ongoing COVID pandemic and the utter failures of leadership, the people are responding with their feet and their voices in a way that we have not seen in a generation.
As listeners of the podcast, you know that we stand for justice, progress, and social equality. We often talk about it through the lens of representation and in the themes of these stories and characters we love, but let us not forget that comics, like all media and art, are a reflection of the society we live in, and we hope the society we wish we lived in. Every time we talk about Wonder Woman or Captain America or Superman or Spider-Man or Ms. Marvel or Supergirl, we do so knowing full well that their heroism is rooted in a fight for equality and a fight against evil, greed, and hate. That fight is and always has been anti-racist, anti-fascist, and anti-injustice. And that's what we try to be here as well. Thanks for listening this week, and know that we stand with those protesting police brutality and dehumanization, and we join the call for justice, for if there is no justice, there is no peace.
We will talk about comics and geek stuff this week, but know that we do so not as a means of escape, but as a means to share those stories of progress and social justice that we love and that we need. We will try to boost the voices of creators of color, queer writers, and women. We will share ways for you to donate or organize or participate in this fight. We will continue to build a community that is safe, welcoming, and positive. And we'll say it just for the record, Black Lives Matter.
Amen. Absolutely. Right on.
That's it, man.
Yeah. So for the record, this is the Talking Comics Podcast. Of course, my name is Steve Say, and I'm here with Bob Ryer and Joey Brucino. This is episode number 445, and this is June 3rd, 2020. As Joey said at the end of our opening statement, we do have some comics for you today. This is going to be a short show. Everybody's a little stressed this week, and we just want to, you know, put something good out into the world and then maybe take a little bit of time for ourselves and for others as well. So we're going to do some lightning rounds, and we're going to do a little tease in a second, and then we'll talk about a few books coming out in the next week, and then we might get out of here and save some of the good stuff that we were planning for tonight for next week. Speaking of next week, we have a very special guest coming to the podcast. We will have Kristen Gudsnuck back onto the show for some good times, for some laughs. It's very creative listener questions and group questions that we're going to pose to one another. We'll likely be talking about her new graphic novel, Minecraft, With or Without You, as well as some of her other stuff, maybe things that she's got in the hopper. And maybe a little bit about what's going on in comics these days. We're all very excited to have Kristen on the show, and we hope that you all tune in for that when that goes down. So, I know that if I open up the floor this week, especially to myself, that it's just going to be an avalanche. So I think that, you know, we might just get right into talking about some comic books. How's that sound?
Comics are good.
All right. Bob, I would like very much if you could kick us off here.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to give you 5 minutes and go.
Last week with Aaron Amos. You know, that sounds like the name of a TV show. Aaron, get your agent on that. But I digress. We were speaking of Crisis on Infinite Earths, and as I said then, I do miss the original Earth 2 and the heroes of the JSA. Well, this week, DC brought out a facsimile edition of the rare DC Superstars number 17, Secret Origins of Superheroes, that featured the first appearance of the Huntress, and this introduced Helena Wayne, the daughter of Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne. I know I've spoken lovingly about this character, and fairly recently, too, but it's a great opportunity to see for yourself why I'm a fan of this version of the character. And now you can buy this for $5 and not $50 or $500, whatever it is now. By the way, The Huntress was created by Paul Levitz, Joe Staton, and Bob Layton. I was able to pick up a copy of Black Widow number 1 by Kelly Thompson, Elena Grande, Jordi Belair, and Corey Pettit. It's not officially out until later in the year, but my local comic shop gave me his sneak preview copy, about which I won't say too much considering how long it's going to be before you guys can pick it up. But the creative team here is off to a fantastic start with an intriguing mystery, lots of spy stuff, plus two cameos that Joey will love that promise to take this series to some really, really interesting places. Now, I'd still like to see Jen Sylvia Saska take another shot at this, but this is looking awesome. Marvel Action, Captain Marvel number 5 by Sam Maggs, Sweeney Boo, Brittany Peer, and Krista Meisner. Well, it continues the team-up of Captain Marvel and the Unstoppable Wasp as they battle those evil beekeepers of AIM. And I don't use the insect nomenclature lightly, as Carol and Nadja have been shrunken down to bug size as part of an evil plot, is there any other kind, to destroy the Avengers. Ms. Maggs has a great feel for Nadja's Whitley-esque personality and cadence, and when you throw in some Agents of Girl appearances, this has the feel of a missing Wasp issue. And speaking of, we wanted the Saskas back on Black Widow. Love to see some more Whitley Wasp goodness right now. Finishing up with two delayed DC minis, first with Metal Men number 6 by Dan Didio, Shane Davis, colors by Jason Wright, letters by Travis Lanham. I've been mostly enjoying Mr. Dio's take up to now. I've accepted his purported love of these characters, and that would keep him away from going too far down some other creators' grim and gritty stuff. Alas, there seems to be just darkness at the end of this tunnel, at least based on events in this issue. I'm in for a pence, in for a pound with this, so touching wood right now as it just turns around soon. Makes me sad. No such hesitation regarding the Greg Rucka, Mike Perkins, Lois Lane number 10, which not only brings us further into the story of the mysterious assassin, the Kiss of Death, but also throws in a huge helping of multiversal shenanigans that suggests to me that this was going to be directly tied to the proposed 5G reboot. Mr. Ruck and Mr. Perkins knocked that pitch out of the park, and when you add in a wonderful Lois Superman scene, this might have been my favorite issue of the run so far.
Ooh.
Yeah, that is all for me. Lois Lane was well worth the wait. Oh, yeah.
It's almost done, right?
Two more. Oof.
Wait, how did you get Black Widow?
Apparently, as that series was supposed to come out around the time of the movie. Marvel was giving shops early copies because of all that had gone on. They were all sitting around, and apparently they wanted to give stores something for having hung in all so long. So he passed it along to me.
Cool, cool.
I know Kelly Thompson was tweeting out that these are rare in the wild, so if you see one, pick it up. So,
yeah, I believe the review embargo is up. I've seen at least a couple of quotes that she's retweeted from, I guess, early reviews.
Yeah. Hey, Marvel doesn't send us anything, so I'll embargo this, huh? I had this fight many years back when I managed 112 Video. We had ways of getting movies early. Big stores get them early, too. They're assembling the cases that go in the big standees, the cardboard things that Best Buy and Target puts up and so on. And our little advantage is, well, we had to pay for these things. Blockbuster and Best Buy weren't. They're all on 90-day billing. So we're putting them out early, sometimes 2 weeks early. And this one day in the midst of real hubbub, I had to come in. It wasn't even my day to work. I had to come in and put out Dark Knight had come out for us anyway. So I'm putting them all in the store, and the phone rings, and I'm just not even thinking. It's a clerk's moment. I'm not even supposed to be here today. I pick up the phone, and someone's, hey, did you get Dark Knight in? And I didn't look at the number, and it sounded like a familiar voice. And yeah, it'll be out later today. Click. 3 minutes later, it's Warner's on the phone. You have Dark Knight out for sale? No, who told you that? It's like, but you can't look. I said to the guy, you don't even send us posters anymore. We get no advertising material, no anything for you. So I, whatever. I don't have your movie. Go bother somebody else. So same here. When Marvel sends me, you know, a nice free Masterworks to review, I'll think different about my sneak preview copies.
Nice.
They ought to, the way we go on about some of their books.
What seriously? Books? There's no books out from them recently.
Oh, too soon.
Hey, whatever. I do want to get back on Lois Lane, though. I'm a couple issues behind.
Yeah, I'm way behind on that. I think I only read maybe 3 or 4 to start, and then I fell into that trap where I was like, oh, just collect it and read it all when it's done, which is pretty much where I'm at with right now.
So much great Renee Montoya stuff. Rucka's Superman and Lois work is stellar.
I feel like everybody else has so much more of a history with Renee Montoya than I do.
Oh, I was just going to say, any book with Renee Montoya in it, I will read.
I mean, the only thing that I can really actually speak to is Gotham Central.
That's perfect. Yeah,
that's it. Like, I haven't read any. No, well, I shouldn't say any. I haven't read any. What?
She was in Detective a little bit, and she was in that. She was in Event Leviathan, which was great. And especially all her Question stuff. It's so good.
See, I'm missing out on that too.
Well,
all right. Maybe that's another.
When you get to this issue 10, you might learn a whole bunch of stuff. I'm just saying.
Hey, as Aaron said last week, DC Universe apparently is very good. So maybe there's some back issues of Renee Montoya stuff that you could read.
Yeah.
I would first need to not live in Canada so that I can have a DC
really?
Universe. Yeah, it's still not here. It's still not here. Everything, not everything, but like a majority of their stuff gets ported over to like a variety of channels. And we don't even have cable anymore. So, like, we have too many streaming services. I don't even know why we have Amazon anymore. I hardly order anything from them. But I think it's like, what is that? That channel, Space?
I don't even know that one.
CTV. I don't know. It's something. But
I remember Spice. That was the adult network years ago.
Oh boy, Bob.
Hey. Well, let's see. Titans wound up on Netflix. Watched the first season of that. Really enjoyed it. Watched the first couple of episodes of season 2, and we're enjoying those as well. But then got distracted by something. And where was
Doom Patrol? Was that another one? Was that Hulu?
That was DC Universe.
That was DC Universe, okay.
Yeah, that was DC Universe, and now it's available on a couple different platforms, and it's out on like Blu-ray and DVD and all that jazz. And that's another something that we watched, I think, 2 or 3 episodes of and then fell away from. And yeah, you know, like, unless I want to watch their stuff illegally, I have to either wait until it comes out or purchase it outright. And, you know, these days there's just money going toward other things.
As I was saying last week, look, I have regular cable vision here. It was the old Suffolk Cable, which is now Optimum, the fancy name. CW has pulled all their shows from Optimum On Demand.
Really?
Yeah. Gone. The primetime shows, it's ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, basically.
Right.
It's like, oh, great. Okay, so an entire network of shows that I would like to maybe look at, gone. So Stargirl, which is on in about 10 minutes as we record, I have to watch on my laptop tomorrow from their app.
Yeah, I do want to see that. I definitely want to check that out. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, with the exception of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is a constant in our lives, I think we're on our ninth, like, series run of that up to date. We just keep watching it over and over again because it's something that consistently makes us laugh. Some of the jokes never get old. The characters are super endearing. And there's some really powerful episodes peppered throughout those seasons as well. But the other thing that we've been binge watching lately is, and this is before they put it back on Netflix for the show's 15th anniversary, but Bronwyn's never seen the entirety of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yeah, I started that too.
Yeah, that is hands down all-time favorite animations, one of them anyway, at least in a top five.
Wow.
For me, and doing this rewatch has just reaffirmed my love and adoration for that series. There are some, we got to an episode last night that, like, I forget how powerful this show is and how it is not a kid's show, that is a straight, you know, epic. And it people die. Like, people die, wars happen, people get hurt, people get lost. And there are these huge, huge emotional arcs for some of these characters, Zuko in particular. And we got to an episode last night. It's like toward the end of season two.
Don't spoil anything now, because I'm in the middle of season one.
Oh, well, they make it to the Earth Kingdom. And there's some stuff that goes on in the Earth Kingdom that, like, there's like three episodes toward the later end of that season where the show just gets, has almost like a horror quality to it. And it's really well done. And we got to an episode last night that was just so intense. There was so much fighting going on. There was like double crosses happening. It was wild. And I really just sat back and I was like, damn, I fucking love Avatar: The Last Airbender so much. Legend of Korra is also amazing. We're going to be working our way up to and through that as well. We watch it during dinner and whatever. It's one of the most wonderful shows I've ever seen in my life. So
cool.
Yeah. Okay. Joey, how would you like 5 minutes for a lightning round?
I'm probably going to run over. I went to some places this week, as I'm sure you could guess, and we'll see how it goes.
Okay. I'll put 5 minutes on the clock for you, and then when it gets close to the thing going off, I'll just cancel it.
You mean when I'm going off?
Ah!
All right.
All right, you've got five. Oh, wait a minute. There's been no lightning. There's been no thunder. There it is. All right, you've got 5-ish minutes on the clock. Go. Mm-hmm.
So now on Wednesday nights on ABC, I think they were on Fridays and then Sundays and then Tuesdays, is wild. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 7, it's returned for its final season. For those that don't know where we've gone in recent years, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have now gone back in time to 1931. Pre-Agent Carter, pre-S.H.I.E.L.D., everything. FDR is forming the SSR, which will become S.H.I.E.L.D. Wow. The Chronicons are this alien race of robot things, and they're coming down and they want to assassinate and they want to eliminate S.H.I.E.L.D. before it becomes a... It's crazy. It's crazy. But I love it. I love S.H.I.E.L.D. There's a huge twist at the end. When you do this time travel shenanigans, you know, things happen. And of course, since it's the last season, they're going to draw back into their long, long history, to create some drama. And, I'm very excited to see where this goes. I love the characters. Mac is awesome. Yo-Yo is great. Daisy's great. What's great about the show is they've never shied away from what makes these characters unique and interesting, their identities, right? Mac, this like 7-foot tall black man in 1931 New York, is going to get a certain response. And they talk about it.
Wow.
Same thing with Daisy. And they don't shy away from it. And they never have. You could tell the budget is lower, though, because as we all know, Yo-Yo had her arms cut off, like in the comics, and she has her these robot arms. But at the beginning of the episode, Simmons is like, "Oh, I made you these arms because they're advanced technology and they look like human arms." And she puts them on, and it's such a moving moment, and it's played so well, and it's just beautiful. But at the same time, in the back of your head, you're like, "That's because they don't have the budget for the CGI arms anymore." But it's part of the story, and it really works. I love it. I know a lot of people have dropped off. It's become really awesome the last couple of years as they've just kind of just done crazy stuff between the Ghost Rider stuff and the Matrix stuff and all the space stuff that they've been doing over the last couple of seasons. It's been great. It's Wednesday nights now. Not that anybody watches it live. I DVR it, as I'm sure everybody else does. I don't even know when that show happens. And then that was last Wednesday. And then, of course, protests started. So I made some decisions about books that I wanted to read. And I started with X-Men God Loves, Man Kills. I did a reread of Chris Claremont and Brent Anderson's work from 1982. And I want you to keep the years I throw at you over the course of the next few minutes in your head. Chris Claremont, Brent Anderson, in 1982, do X-Men God Loves, Man Kills. And the book opens page one with two black children running for their lives through a park, and they are subsequently shot and killed by purifiers because, as they say, of how they look and what they are. Page one, 1982, X-Men God Loves, Man Kills. This is a book, for those that aren't familiar, graphic novel about the X-Men. This is where William Stryker comes from, the purifiers, Stryker's use of religion and fear and hate and the media to kind of rile up this anti-mutant hysteria. And of course, there's this crazy plan where he kidnaps Xavier and he's going to use his psychic powers to kill the mutants. If you saw X2, X-Men United, it's the same thing, but it's there. And I reread it because, you know, everyone says like, "Oh, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, then they did the X-Men. It was MLK and Malcolm X, Xavier and Magneto." And that's not exactly true, right?
No, it isn't. No.
It's not true pretty much at all, though we know that Stan Lee did the soapbox stuff. It really wasn't until the late 70s and early 80s, under the pen of people like Chris Claremont and Len Wein, who were telling these stories with the X-Men, that drew these corollaries between this struggle being feared and hated and the experience of people of color in the United States. And a story like God Loves, Man Kills is the one that turns Magneto really into what he is today and turns the X-Men into this civil rights corollary that people still talk about, obviously, to this day. It's become integral to the identity of what the X-Men is and are. So I started there because I was like, I need some X-Men here. It's a way through which I see the world. Right. And I saw this great kind of meme that was like, Cyclops was right. You know, like Cyclops was like, we tried to live on an island. We tried to do our own thing. And look what happened. They keep coming after us. And I was like, yeah, Cyclops, you know, I got the shirt. So I read some X-Men God Loves, Man Kills. And that brought me back to I went out to Comixology and I searched for books about Black Lives Matter protests, books about protests and protest movements in the past. Comixology, side note here, needs a content tag search. You can only search genre, creator, and like title. And I just like wanted to type in and search like protest movements or like, you know, Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. things like that. And it's, you can't find anything. Like there's no like tags. That's just a note about searching. But anyway, I read two books, one I read before and one that I just totally found new. The first one is called 6 Days in Cincinnati, a graphic account of the riots that shook the nation a decade before Black Lives Matter. This is the graphic history of the 2001 Cincinnati riots, told for the first time from the, this is from the publisher, Microcosm Publishing. This is the graphic history of the 2001 Cincinnati riots, told for the first time from the perspective of the participants. When Timothy Thomas, a 19-year-old black man, was fatally shot by police, the city broke out into nonviolent civil disobedience that was met with further police violence. This was the first major uprising of the 21st century, matched only the LA riots a decade before and the protests in Ferguson over a decade later. Author and illustrator Dan Mendez Moore was 17 at the time and participated in the 6 days of protests that shook the city between Thomas's death and his funeral. Mendez Moore's comics journalism account sensitively captures a fiery moment in U.S. history through interviews with protesters, community leaders, bystanders, and a frustrated looter. He portrays the tension of a city boiling over, political leaders taking advantage, and an inner city community coming together. 6 Days in Cincinnati is an all-American story of systemic racism and the power of popular movements more relevant today than ever before. So the title, that's the pitch from the publisher. The title comes from the Mark Twain quote, "If the world comes to an end, I want to be in Cincinnati. Everything comes there 10 years later." Which at the time referred to the fact that the Tim Thomas murder and subsequent marches came 10 years after the Rodney King events in LA in 1991. Of course, now this is just another example on a long, long list of black men and women who have been killed. And the irony, of course, is that Moore's retrospective kind of documentary comic is published in 2017. So the fact that he's saying 10 years after Rodney King is published 16 years after that, and the storyline is still pertinent and still continues on from there. For those that are familiar with works like the Laramie Project or other kind of like docu-theater projects where you have these various characters popping in and out to share their experiences, Mendez Moore really structures his work around that. And the aesthetic of it really follows that kind of hip-hop DIY styling of 1980s comics. That was 2001, written in 2017, right? I also read I Am Alfonso Jones again. I'd read this before. Friend of the pod, Mara, posted about it on her Instagram. So I was like, oh, let me read that again too. Tony Medina and Stacey Robinson. This was published in 2018. This incredible graphic novel tells a fictional iteration of police brutality enacted upon a black teenage boy in a way that feels so much like nonfiction that it's scary. There are several points during the story of Alfonso Jones, a 15-year-old Latino black boy who wants to play the trumpet and act and goes to an arts high school in Harlem and has a crush and wants to play Hamlet in the school play, who is profiled and killed by a police officer in a department store. I kept asking myself if this were a true event. Medina's representation of it it feels so real. Medina structures the story superbly. He spends much of the first half of the book giving us the day-to-day joys and dreams of Alfonso, much the way that Ryan Coogler structures Fruitvale Station, for those that have seen that film, which told the story of Oscar Grant, who was murdered by BART police officers at a BART station in Oakland in 2009. Medina uses Hamlet, the story of a ghost returned from murder to ask his family for vengeance, as a framing device for when Alfonso is killed and comes back as a ghost led by the ancestors, black and brown men and women who have also been victims of violence, to see his past and future play out, the protests, the pain, and the memories. It's a powerful, pertinent, and painful graphic novel designed for young readers, but accessible to all. And then I ended the week kind of rereading March, John Lewis, Andrew Aden, Nate Powell, which we just, of course, loved on the show and have spoken about multiple times. Yeah. I reread it because I needed to. It's a celebration and a reminder of yet another moment in history that taught lessons about protest, perseverance, and violence. And yet again, one that we too often forget or leave to kind of romanticizations, right? The notions of civil rights as nonviolence, right? As a nonviolent movement when they were faced with violence at every turn. John Lewis's story takes place during the 1950s and 60s. X-Men was in 82. Cincinnati told a story that took place in 2001. Alfonso Jones was published in 2018. And here we are again in 2020 after a month of all of this, which is on top of years of all of this, right? And it just got me kind of like thinking, like, how can you say that the personal isn't political? How can you say that comics aren't political, that media shouldn't be political, that stories shouldn't be political, because they are the only way through which we can kind of see our lives represented, right? Which is why, you know, I've made lists. And if you follow Vita Ayala or David F. Walker or the Blurred Girl on Twitter, like, they're making lists of black creators that, like, these are the stories that, like, they, the fact that we haven't heard them, the fact that people haven't read Hurston or Baldwin or Ellison or Giovanni or Kendi or Coates or Morrison, right? The fact that people haven't experienced these stories, is part of the problem. It's why people are having such difficulty empathizing or are so shocked by what they're seeing, when the reality is, if you pay attention to these damn stories, you'd know this history, right? I just want to end my session here with a quote from one of my absolute favorites, James Baldwin. He's gave this interview in the 80s, and the interviewer was like, you know, what about patience, right? And he says, how much time do you want for your progress? He talks about how he'd been alive for 60 years up until that point, and those 60 years of his life, he's not going to have another 60 years. Does he have to wait how long, right? Does his nieces and nephews have to wait? His parents waited. Their parents waited, right? How long do we have to wait for progress? And one of my favorite books is Fire Next Time from James Baldwin. At the end of that, he quotes a biblical spiritual, and he warns at the end of that book. He says, he quotes, you know, God gave Noah the sign after the floods, right, as a warning. And he said, no more water, the fire next time. And as I read through these stories and I see the years on them and I see how many years we've been telling the same damn stories, I wonder, when are people going to listen? And maybe it's now. And that's what I've been doing.
There you go. Amen, Joey. And we're, 99 years almost to the day of the Tulsa riots?
Yeah. Tulsa, which many people learned about for the first time in Watchmen this year. Right. And that is like, if you just like look at the events, like the details of Tulsa, you can just like bring it right over. Like it's the things never change. No. Right. And I've been thinking too about like 1770 Boston Massacre, Crispus Attucks, the first black man, the first person, the first casualty of the American Revolutionary War. Like, it's like you just go back to it, right? It's like it's been here forever and people just haven't been listening, partly because the stories haven't been told, right? Which is why I'm glad like that on the show we've been able to talk about T. Franklin and Vita Ayala and David F. Walker and Danny Lohr and Chuck Brown and Sanford Green, right? Like, and Eve Ewing. We did Ironheart a couple of weeks ago, and Jamal Campbell and Jamal Igle, like Roxane Gay, who's this amazing writer, but she's doing comics now. Like, the stories are there. People just need to pay attention. And if you, as we know, when you experience the stories, you connect. And I think that's really like my mindset over the last couple of days, as I've like seen these protests on Twitter and things, but these stories that I need to share on the podcast and share with my students and share with people.
Yeah. Diversity, it powers everybody. With that empathy you're talking about, when I was in school in the midst of the racial injustice and strife of the later 60s, we spent, I think, an hour on the Tulsa massacre, where this horde of aggrieved, in multiple air quotes, white folks decided they needed to just murder everyone of color they could find. And it was the 60s. I know people who've gone to school in the U.S. since, who's just as you're saying, Joey, their first inkling that such a thing happened was from The Watchmen. And we need to look at how we teach our history. We do... Yeah. Not meaning to sound like I'm making a pun here. We tend to whitewash what we've done wrong.
Think about the textbooks.
Right. We all read George Takei's They Called Us Enemy and all were moved tremendously by it. And many people don't know of that slice of American history.
I didn't know it. Yeah. I didn't know it before I read that book.
We need to be able to see the world through others' eyes. I've told the stories before. The first is actually, it would have been my parents' 80th wedding anniversary. My dad grew up in the teens and 19-teens and 20s in Harlem during what was the Harlem Renaissance. He was the only white kid in his class. To him, they were all his friends. They were his baseball playing buddies, the guys he worked with. And that continued through his whole life. By seeing the world through others' eyes, we tend to understand the struggles everyone has. We look at the world through a different lens, and there has been some progress. It is better than it was, but it's still so far from where it needs to be. We all need to look in the mirror a little bit. We all need to say, okay, I do think of myself in a certain way, but I can do more. I can make sure that everyone knows stories, knows what the world is about from someone else's perspective.
Mm. Ooh. Heavy times.
Yeah. Those two books that like we haven't read that I mentioned, 6 Days in Cincinnati and I Am Alfonso Jones, were actually really cool, kind of like the storylines as well, I think very powerful, but just like aesthetically and structurally and the way that they use the comics medium, I really loved too. And I've been on that kick for the last like month, right? So like to read these and see like a docu-comic, like I haven't read a lot of those, and the way that he structures it's so awesome. And I Am Alfonso Jones is awesome, and I know a lot of teachers use it. It's a fantastic, fantastic book. But still, same thing, the way it frames, the way that it uses Hamlet, it's just a really great text. So, I mean, another thing too is if you're looking to like get someone in your life to understand, a young person, an old person, doesn't matter. Like give them these books, give them these stories, challenge them, teach them. Like, that's the thing. Like, we need to be, as Bob, you were saying, we need to be more responsible for how we create the world that we want to see.
Yeah. Perfect, Joey. Beautifully said.
Absolutely. Arrived at my lightning round time. I'm going to put 5 minutes on the clock for what is sure to be a very slapdash presentation with no notes. So enjoy that. Here we go. 5 minutes on the clock. I don't need no notes to tell you about Ascender. That is Jeff Lemire, Dustin Nguyen, Steve Wands on letters. So I didn't know what Ascender was supposed to be before I started reading it. Like I said last week, I had read the first two issues, but still like didn't really grasp where it was going to go. Now I've read issues numbers 1 through 10. Let me tell you something. I would be perfectly happy if Ascender/Descender, whatever they decide to call it next, if this series just kept going. I love the characters that are featured in the series so much. So where Descender is much more intergalactic robots and big standoffs in the sky and stuff like that, Ascender is a sequel series that delves much more into magic. Basically, magic has returned to, we'll say, the Earth, but really the planets or the districts or whatever. And everything is in ruin and everything's kind of getting a new start, and magic has returned. And you've got this like wicked vampire witch queen thing pulling the strings, and she's got her coven of ancestors that I'm pretty sure she killed all of them. And this series, Jeff Lemire has never presented anything like this before. And I'm pretty sure that I've read everything the guy's ever put out, at least on an independent front. There is definitely some superhero stuff and some Black Hammer stuff that I've yet to read, but this is one of his best, like hands down. I'm absolutely in love with it. And my favorite things about Ascender is that it finds a natural way of bringing surviving characters from that first series into this one. And the way that it's done, like I had a moment at the end of issue number 10, I won't spoil it, but like a character from Descender returns. And it was just, it was a huge, huge moment for me. I was like, oh, not only did they survive, but like they're back. And now they're in this world and in this time and with these characters. Now we're going to get to see how they react to this person. And I find myself being invested in characters like I haven't been in a while. To be quite honest with you, it's kind of like reinvigorated my love for comics throughout this pandemic because it's been a little grim. I definitely enjoy going through Nailbiter and a couple of other things that I've brought to the show, but between Descender and Ascender, it's been the best thing that I've read in a really, really long time. And I positively love it. I got to check out King of Nowhere, number two. This comes from W. Maxwell Prince, that's words, and art by Tyler and Hillary Jenkins. So I've talked about this book in the past. This is a book about a dude who basically has a history of blacking out and waking up in strange places. And one day this happens to him and he wakes up in this like bizarre Ralph Steadman-y Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas meets Rango like dreamscape reality town called Nowhere. And he, in one way or another, gets like deputized. Like they bring him into the fold and they want him to not restore order, but like basically find out what the hell is going on in this town. And this book is just filled to the brim with strange characters. And Bob, if you want to talk about chicken fat, like there's all kinds of chicken fat in the kind of the populace of Nowhere.
Cool.
You know, people with three faces and fish people in like bellhop outfits and deer people. And that's kind of where the story is headed, is there was a death at the end of the first issue. And so now the dude that came into Nowhere is being asked to help them look into it. And there's this like serial killer dude that is chasing him. He doesn't know that yet. It's a whole thing. And it's just kind of very, it's not kind of, it is, it's really weird and kind of fascinating. And I have absolutely no idea where it's going or how long it's supposed to be, but I'm into it. And it's a good, so far, it's a good issue to issue book in its reveals and its stuff like that. I'm just going to cancel this at 5 seconds left. Give me a break. Minecraft, With or Without You, Kristen Goodsnook. We will have Kristen on the show, and Bob has talked about the Minecraft graphic novel. Now, I've only read, I would say, about half of it, but so far, like it is a pure joy to read. And I think whether you're a fan of the Minecraft game franchise or not, I have played zero Minecraft. I think I booted Minecraft up one day. I took a pickaxe to a wall, took away like one chunk, and then that's my Minecraft story right there. The other half of that, I think I've talked about it, is my friend Brendan just building really elaborate things and me going over to his house and him showing them to me with his chest puffed and very prideful and like, look at what I made. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. It's like 16-bit greatness right there, friend. But apparently it was like this big thing with all these complex pipes underneath the ground, and he'd made waterfalls, and it takes days to weeks to create them. And you know what? I was very happy for him. And so I went into Minecraft having a very basic knowledge of the series. And I'll be damned if Kristen doesn't take the Minecraft premise and just run hog wild with it, but it still retains that like Goodsnook charm and kind of sassiness that she has to her characters, how excited they are about adventuring, and they're all kind of kooky in their own way. And there's really good banter between the brother sister twin characters. I like their chemistry. And yeah, I mean, so far I'm part of the way through it, and great characters. I can definitely see some of the lessons to be learned by the end of the book starting to take shape.
Yep.
I believe Bobby was saying something about characters learning that people are not always what they seem, or something to that effect. Yeah. There's definitely some judgment and some hoodwinking going down I think that some of our characters are going to realize that that's not the way by the close of the book. And I like the enemies. I think they're a lot of fun. The dog that is running around is
a lot
of
wolf.
Fun too.
It's a wolf. Wilkie the wolf. But it's Penny. It's Kristen's dog Penny. We know that.
It is, right? I thought so.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, so that's cool. And you know, obviously Kristen's a friend and stuff. So like we see those personal touches in her work and things like that. And yeah, and you know, whether she's doing one of her own or she's doing a licensed property for Mojang, like it's great so far. I can't wait to finish it and talk to her about it next week. I definitely have a question or two about the process of this being made. So, yeah. And I mean, other than that, I had blazed through Ascender like the night after I had finished Descender. So whenever you heard the last podcast, that Thursday night or, whatever, I was probably done with that. And then, you know, things started to heat up and, I got distracted and let it consume me and did not get much else read. I have very much been trying to take some, you know, like mental health time for myself throughout this stuff. I have some family things going on right now, in addition to all of this this COVID and you know, protest matters and stuff like that. And so one of the things that I've really been enjoying lately a lot is bringing out the PlayStation VR, going into that helmet, sealing it shut, and just putting on some headphones and going into some of the games that I haven't visited in a while. And so right now I am picking up the remaining bots and finding the chameleons in a book, a game called Astrobot Rescue Mission. I talked about Iron Man VR, I think last week or the week before, and said that if you own a PlayStation VR that you should give the demo a try. This is the game that if you own a PlayStation VR and you don't have this game, you are missing out. I would buy a PlayStation VR just for this experience. It is mind-blowing. It is very much a 3D platformer akin to like a Mario 64 or anything else of the like. And the immersiveness of the game is unreal. The controls are tight. The game is funny. And you are a little robot, a little Sony PlayStation mascot robot from their like test centers and things that they've released throughout the years for some of their peripherals and whatever. And you're just going around levels, collecting coins and rescuing your little robot friends. And the elaborate nature of these designs. And it's like a 1-1, 1-2 type of world setup. And you fight like larger than life bosses. There is a boss that is a mechanical shark that literally finds you on a raft out in the middle of nowhere in the water with this mechanical shark circling you and chomping at you and charging at you and everything. And every time that he does, pieces of the raft fall apart. And so you have to move and you have to watch your step and jump and do all these things. And it is just absolutely unbelievable. And I've really, really been enjoying that lately. That has been a place of peace for me in these last couple of days. And I'm very thankful for it. So yeah, that's pretty much what I got. I think that's it. I read some Ironheart, more Ironheart. I finished the E-Viewings Ironheart stuff, and I started reading 2020 Ironheart from Vito Ayala.
Sweet. Yeah. I got to catch up. I'm a little bit behind, but I definitely want to. I love the character. I think I'm so glad that like you brought it to the show. And then I was like, yeah. Well, because I read her in, what was it? The Champions. Mm-hmm. As per that question we got a couple of months ago, that was like, what do you think of Champions? And I was like, guess I'm reading Champions. I you know, then you read the main series. So I'm glad you did because I love it. I think it's an awesome character and a character that totally has a future. Like,
oh, absolutely.
On multiple screens.
Yeah. I think that there's definitely things in the works for Riri Williams. Yeah. I have to say it's, that series really, really started off with a bang with the 11 issues of the Bendis stuff. Yeah. In my personal opinion, that's still the best of the bunch. It was very much like the beginnings of G. Willow Wilson's Ms. Marvel for me reading the beginning Riri stuff. And they do some interesting things in the E-Viewing run, which is only, I believe, about five or six issues.
Yeah.
And so that comes and goes. And there were definitely, you know, aspects to it that I appreciated. There was also definitely some stuff that I didn't care for, things that seemed to be missing from the character, then kind of fundamentally changed the character. And I do realize that characters need to grow and evolve, and it's all part of the journey and things like that. I just, it really did feel like some stuff was missing. But that being said, Vita, and I'm sorry that I don't know the artist on the book. I don't have anything in front of me. But so this is getting a little bit more of that back, or if it's not bringing that back, it's at least capitalizing on what was very good about the e-viewing stuff and is kind of running with it. It sounds, the character work, their voices sound more confident in them speaking to one another. They've now at least forged a history. Like, Riri now has a friend and a constant in this series besides her. And so that's progress for the character. Yeah. And that's good. And I'm still hoping for a little bit better interactivity between her and her new AI. Like I said the last time, I really think it was a brilliant move to give that job or that to make the AI who they made it. You'll see if you read it. I don't want to spoil anything.
The artist on Ironheart 2020 is David Messina. Vita co-wrote it with Danny Lore. Vita and Danny did Quarter Killer, which I loved. And I talked about a bunch.
I have that. I got to read that.
It's fun. It's wacky, but it's fun.
Wacky sounds real good right now. So yeah, waves, I suppose, you know, like really, really big opening. Still a very good, but maybe a little bit of a downturn for the second arc, at least for me. And, you know, adding Vita and company's voice to that character, I think was a real solid move. Even if it's just for this issue, it was cool.
Yeah.
It was definitely cool. I like that. I like the Riri Williams character a lot. And I'm excited to see where she goes. And, you know, once we eventually return to some kind of schedule and some manner of normalcy within the industry, we could see that character really take off in the coming years.
I think you'll see her as part of Young Avengers when that will happen somewhere down the road.
Mm-hmm.
She'll definitely be part of that, so they'll probably have to introduce her with her own series first.
Just yeah. Saying. Yep, 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 yep.
And someday we'll get outlawed.
they actually talk about outlawed in the new 2020 issue, and it had one of those little like things at the bottom was, you know, this happened in Outlawed. And I was like, well, I have no idea what they're talking about, but okay. Let's keep going. So that's okay. That's on me. I didn't read it. And that's it. That's it. We have we had some listener questions. We had some emails. Just don't want anybody to think that we were not pulling those. And you know, we do plan to answer those. We're going to save them. We're going to save them for another show. And maybe get Kristen to give her take on a couple of these fun questions.
Sure, she'll be up for it. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I'm anxious to hear her responses to these for sure. So, other than that, I think we're just going to talk about like the few books that we're looking forward to this week, and then we're going to bounce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Joey, are you picking anything up?
Not really. I was talking with Bob a little bit off air about like, so this week I was like, I'm going to read these books about, you know, protest movements and things like that, because it's just where my headspace was. And I think what I want to do for the next week or next couple of weeks is really that thing that we brought up at the beginning of the show, which is like boosting writers of color, creators of color. And, you know, we've already mentioned some of our favorites tonight or today on this episode. You know, Vita and Danny and Eve are great. Talked a little bit about Ta-Nehisi Coates. I'm going to try and catch up with his Captain America stuff and the Black Panther stuff as well. there's several things from like Chuck Brown, Sandra Green, and David F. Walker with Bitterroot, and that book that I started reading about the elections that are
oh, cage
fights. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was so cool. There's a couple of issues of that I want to follow up as well, and read some more of what like Nnedi Okorafor has been writing for Marvel. There's just a bunch of like black books that I want to read, black creators that I want to read, and I'm going to try and do that over the course of the next couple of days, to really kind of, you know, keep that momentum going of boosting those voices. And in terms of like new books this week, there's not much coming out. There's still much of a trickle, but there's that Catwoman anniversary issue. I'm a big Catwoman fan, so I might check that out. And there's a graphic novel coming from Boom called We Serve the People, My Mother's Stories. This graphic novel about this kind of autobiographical graphic novel about kind of Maoist China and growing up in Maoist China. So I might check that one out as too.
Sweet. How about you, Bob?
My store is a little behind. They got caught in the diamond crunch somehow. So I'm getting Wonder Woman 755 this week, which came out in some places last week, because 756 is coming out next week. It's complicated, but we're finishing up Steve Orlando's run, so I want to see how that's going to work. I'm definitely getting Sabrina Something Wicked This Way Comes, number one, to see what Kelly Thompson's up to over there. November number two by Matt Fraction and Elsa Chartier has come out.
Oh, wow.
So going to get that. I don't know if it'll be here in time. I ordered from the good folks at ABE Books. It's a collection of Trina Robbins' Honey West comics, the private eye detective novels of actually the late 50s that were a TV show with Anne Francis back in 65 or so. And based on what Joey says, I think I'm going to go back into David F. Walker's Shaft.
Ooh.
I haven't read since we talked about it on the show, which is now 4 or 5 years ago. He even wrote a novel, which I have a nice autographed copy of that I've not gotten to for 2 years, but is sitting around. But if I won't get to that in time, but I definitely going to go look back at the comics.
Very cool. That sounds like a plan. So for me, I actually went to my LCS this past week.
Good for you.
Yeah. I went in there and I grabbed the second hardcover volume of Descender to finish off the series, have it nice and displayed, which I've already put it up on the wall and have taken stuff down and rearranged it. So once that Wicked and Divine fourth volume, which was quite meaty, and the like a companion volume also of all the holiday specials is attached to that. So that just threw me all out of whack, and the Wicked and Divine stuff got too big for that shelf, and it needed to be spined as opposed to turned facing outward. But while I was at the shop, I picked up a graphic novel called Camp Spirit, and it's basically about a bunch of like 90s kids going to a camp together, and there's some shenanigans, and I really like the art. It kind of reminds me a bit of Kristen mixed with John Allison.
Ooh.
in a way. Yeah, it's it looks cool. It's got a lot of attitude. I've read the first couple pages of it, and like right on the very first page, they're talking about like, you know, after you're done, you should come by and listen to the new Nine Inch Nails album. And I'm like, oh boy, this is singing Steve's song right here. So that's definitely my generation. And it is very much that of a group of women going to be camp counselors. And I don't know, someone shows up, an undesired person from high school shows up and throws their whole, you know, comfortable job situation out of whack, and stuff happens. I don't know. I'll find out. I might check that out. I picked up the physical version of Superman Smashes the Klan.
Nice.
Which I think might now make my list, given everything that's going on.
Totally.
And I only read that first issue.
Does the collection have the essay?
I don't know.
Because it was brilliant.
I'll let you know next week. You know what? I'm definitely going to read that. So I will let you know next week for sure. So let's see. Superman Smashes the Klan. Aaron's got me wanting to catch up with Far Sector. And Far Sector number six comes out Wednesday. So Far Sector number six for me. Nailbiter Returns. number one is coming out. I'm definitely going to be picking that up. Super, super looking forward to that after doing my reread a couple weeks ago. Aquaman 59 is supposed to hit the shelves. I honestly don't know what's happening with DC books, either physically or digitally. I have no idea. And then the other book I have on my list is the Sabrina the Teenage Witch, so Something Wicked This Way Comes, from Kelly Thompson and company. So
Aquaman should be out. It might be out in some stores and not in others.
Mm.
Diamond and the Midtown and Discount Comic Book Services thing is still in flux.
Well, that's thankfully that's on my pull list. So if yeah. that does indeed come out, it will end up in my folder for when I go to the store to go and pick up my stuff.
You mentioned Walker's Shaft. He's got another book at Marvel from a few years back called Nighthawk that was like really short, but really awesome. And I've seen it kind of popping up on Twitter the last few minutes. And I might check that one out again too, because I remember really liking it, but it was only about 5 issues. And then I think Marvel was like, this is too much. This is a little political there. And David F. Walker was like, F y'all, I'm out. Yeah.
You hire David F. Walker, that's what you're going to get. Even Power Man Iron Fist.
It was
a lot of fun, but it was also a lot of great stuff, a lot of great political stuff, a lot of great social stuff in there. That's the kind of writer he is.
Mm. There's good stuff out there. It's good stuff to revisit. And I'm sure that there are going to be some powerful books made from everything that's going on now in time. So, yeah. Does anybody have any closing statements before we get out of here?
Mm-mm. Nah, man. We'll link to some stuff in the show notes. Things and causes and organizations that you can check out. But yeah.
For sure. All right. We've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. Do I have to do this whole thing? This feels weird.
Yeah, man. This is the sign off. You gotta do it.
All right. As always, you can send us your comments or questions through our email podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. And hey, listen, use that email. If you need to talk, if you need to reach out, if you need to get at us or whatever, you got stuff on your mind, you want to either hear stuff talked about on the show or you just need to vent or whatever. We're a small enough operation that we can, pay attention to that stuff when we see it. So podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com is the email. We are also on Twitter, where you can tweet us @talkingcomics. And talkingcomicbooks.com is where you'll find our reviews from our fantastic contributors. And we have other podcasts, including Talking Valiant, D&D Adventure, and Ladies of Valhalla, even though I will say they are their own machine. They are doing things. They are making moves. And still my favorite podcast on the internet. So ladiesofvalhalla.com. Go and check that out. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Old-fashioned email. BobRyer@talkingcomicbooks.com.
And Joey?
@JoeyBruccino.
And Jessica is @Jarsco for all the things, whereas Sarah is @GeekCountryLady and Bronwyn is @ShinyBabyB. I am @Dead_Anchoress. So for Bob.
Two quick things. Belated happy birthday to our friend Melissa Megan.
Yay!
And as we used to say back in the 60s, power to the people, all people.
Mm-hmm. For Joey.
Happy beginning of Pride Month here. Pride, which started as protests against police outside Stonewall, downtown Manhattan.
Of course, I'm Steve Say. Everybody, take care. Take care of each other. Be safe out there. Be vigilant. And, like Bob said, power to the people. And just Godspeed to everybody out there that is fighting the good fight right now. Love you, care about you, and we will be back next time on the Talking Comics podcast. To be continued.
Yeah. Speaking of the cough and the silence, I love that that's a gag on Avatar. I was like, this is like randomly, yep. They'll just be like, no, like they'll make a joke. There'll be no sound and just hear in the background.
It's amazing. Between that and the guy with all the cabbages. Have you gotten there yet? Does he come
back? I've only seen the one episode where he's in there.
Yes. He is a he is a traveling man. and oh my god.
Cabbages.
We hit another episode last night with him in it, and so Bronwyn's experiencing the Cabbage Man for the first time, and she's just like, oh my god, he's back! It's just, it's amazing.
It's a great show. I really love it. And I get it. I get why
just you wait, man.
I get why adults love it. It's, well, I mean, like, the first episode, what's her name? The girl?
Katara.
Katara is like, why? Because I'm a girl? And I'm like, damn, this, like, first episode, they're like, gender equality.
Oh, dude, wait until you meet Toph. Toph's introductory episode is baller. Like, she, they straight up establish her as, like, so far the biggest badass that you've met in the show so far. And Katara eventually gets there as well. The character arcs throughout that series are nothing short of amazing.
Wait,
and you haven't seen anything yet.
Is Legend of Korra like a spinoff?
It's a sequel.
A different thing. It's a sequel? It's a sequel. I ain't got time for no damn sequel.
Yes, you will. You will have time. You will make time. Trust me. Wait till you get to the second season of Avatar, man. You're going to flip your shit.
All right.
The stuff that we're watching right now is so powerful. And to think that this came out 15 years ago. It's amazing.
On Nickelodeon.
Yeah, and the animation is timeless. Like the art style that they use and everything, it has not aged. It still looks incredible.